from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. This morning, the investigative reporting project California Watch released a series of reports about alleged abuse of the developmentally disabled at state facilities that were not fully investigated. In our next half hour, we'll hear from the reporter who conducted the investigation and get reaction from a state legislator. And then at 9:30, we'll turn to Governor Brown's proposal to shut down the state's remaining juvenile justice facilities and send some 1,100 of the state's most serious juvenile offenders back to the counties. Protecting the developmentally disabled and juvenile justice. Ahead on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Some of California's most vulnerable citizens may also be among the least protected. That's the story that's portrayed in a series of reports out this morning from our media partner, California Watch, which is part of the Center for Investigative Reporting. According to the reports, allegations of abuse at California Centers for the Developmentally Disabled often receive only minimal investigation and even rarer prosecution. 1,800 adults suffering from disabilities such as autism and cerebral palsy live in the five state centers. The California Watch investigation found that, quote, 850 cases of confirmed patient abuse and unexplained injuries at the centers during a recent three-year period. Joining us during this first half hour of forum this morning to begin our conversation of this subject, Ryan Gabrielson, who is the public safety reporter for California Watch at the Center for Investigative Reporting and wrote the story that's out this morning. Ryan, good morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Tell us first something about the individuals, these 1,800 human beings who live in these centers.
They're some of the most disabled and vulnerable people in California. As you guys noted, they have cerebral palsy, profound mental retardation in many cases, severe autism. Some can't speak, have never spoken a word in their lives. Some can't move. I mean, they're quadriplegic, paraplegic. They are extremely vulnerable and, generally speaking, would either have or would struggle in group homes out in the community.
And what are some of the cases of alleged abuse that you uncovered in your investigation?
From 2008 to 2010, the Department of Public Health's inspection data shows over 600 substantiated unexplained injuries. And from the case files that we've been able to get, they've shown broken bones, large bruises, cigarette burns on the skin, genital lacerations, very serious stuff.
And what is the percentage of those cases that you've investigated that actually wound up receiving a full investigation and or were moved into some kind of prosecution?
We've only found two arrests that could be categorized, as that across the state. Now, a lot of records we can't get. The Sonoma County District Attorney's Office refused our records request for any records about cases referred. But logs of cases referred for prosecution in Orange County, Tulare County, and beyond showed no patient abuse cases referred in the past decade.
And again, these are individuals who are not only vulnerable in terms of their disability being subject to potential abuse, they're also people who can't easily report those cases.
That's exactly right. And interviews with these folks can be much more difficult, and you have to take a much different approach for them, and it requires special training in many cases. A lot of law enforcement agencies, especially the larger ones, will have a whole specific unit dedicated to crimes against dependent adults, crimes against children, because it's a very different techniques that have to be involved to extract, reliable statements from them.
And we'll get into more of the concerns that you uncovered about whether or not the proper people are in place to conduct those kinds of investigations as we continue. But we also want to welcome in now California Assemblymember Jim Bell. He represents the 24th District, which includes Campbell, Saratoga, and parts of Santa Clara, San Jose, and Los Gatos. Assemblyman Bell, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
I know you have a particular concern about this area because you, too, have a family member. As you have read the reports that Ryan Gabrielson has put together, tell us something about that from your personal standpoint, having a child who's also developmentally disabled.
Well, for from my standpoint as a parent and a legislator, I believe that people with developmental disabilities are victimized more frequently than the general population, and we estimate 4 to 10 times as more frequently than the general population. People with developmental disabilities are victimized both in the developmental centers, which are essentially segregated living environments similar to a state hospital, and also in the community as well. So people with developmental disabilities are victimized more. Myself as a parent, I know that because my stepson has been subject to crime and so forth. He lives in the community. Like about 96% of the people calculated in California to be developmentally disabled actually live in the community. They don't live in developmental centers run by the state. So,
and these centers, then house some of the most severely disabled, which again, as Ryan Gabrielson was noting, make them particularly vulnerable. What is your reaction to the stories that have come out this morning in terms of what you think ought to be done? What action are you considering doing as a member of the State Assembly?
Well, I think one of the issues that I'm going to be looking at very closely is the fact that the Department of Developmental Services is responsible for operating the developmental centers. And part of the investigation that takes place is the Department of Public Health. And I think there's somewhat of a disconnect. There has been studies of this in the past, and I think we need to investigate whether or not we have adequate staff, adequate procedures, and whether or not it's in the right department even to stop and reduce the amount of abuse in our developmental centers. So
we should have to do things like that. Sorry to interject. We should note, by the way, that we invited representatives from the Department of Development Services to participate in our discussion this morning, but they did not make anyone available to participate in our conversation. Are you planning, Assemblyman Bell, on calling hearings? What's sort of the next step that you're going to take in the Assembly?
Well, I think getting the information, I think, so getting the request to the director of the Developmental Services Department to find out a complete report on this, and then have an open public process to discuss it, inviting clients that are in the system, family members, and maybe doing some personal field hearings out into the developmental centers in California. I visited most of the centers myself, but I think maybe it's time to go around and look at them personally with some people from the state attorney general's office. More information needs to be collected. And then we should consider having oversight hearings on an ongoing basis on this subject.
Assemblyman Jim Bell, who represents the 24th District in the Assembly. Assemblyman Bell, I know you have to leave us, but thanks very much for adding your both personal and professional participation to our conversation today.
Yes, and thank you. And a lot of the cases might be people in the, the clients having problems, doing the injuries to the other clients. But if it's the staff that's caring for the clients doing the injuries, I think both issues have to be addressed, and we have to look at both issues, whether or not the clients are doing something to other clients. That could be a sign of management problems, inadequate staff or training. And then if the client, if the staff is doing injuries to the clients, that's to me, that's a crime, and we ought to have those crimes prosecuted.
Assemblyman Jim Bell, thanks again for your participation. Ryan Gabrielson, when we heard Assemblyman Bell say that one of the things he wants to do is perhaps conduct some field hearings, in a way it's a kind of reminder that to some extent these centers are forgotten. I have to say, until I saw your reporting, that I was under the impression that those state centers had mostly, if not completely, closed. So it's a way of bringing attention to those individuals.
It's true. And they have shrunk and they are closing. The state right now is currently working to close the Lanterman Developmental Center in Pomona. So that is underway. And one of the interesting things that stood out is when I was asking around about this the police force that they have at the developmental centers, the Office of Protective Services, and I was asking DA's offices and other law enforcement what they knew about it and what cases they'd received from this force. They didn't know the force existed in many cases.
Let's describe that, if you would. And we also would welcome our listener participation. If you have concerns about this, if you have a family member who is at one of the centers, or if you have dealt with this problem of alleged abuse of people who are developmentally disabled, we'd like to hear your perspective, too. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. But these centers have their own police force, which would seem on the surface to be something that would bring that much more attention to these potential crimes. And yet you discovered the opposite.
Well, it's a matter of who's running the investigations. It's a police force that reports directly to the administration in Sacramento. For the people who run the developmental centers are the boss, over the police force. So it's not an independent investigative force. They report directly to the administrators. So that's one thing. That's a conflict of interest that Sally Lieber, back when she was in the Assembly in 2008, tried to remove by having the chief of police for the Office of Protective Services appointed by the governor's office. That bill failed. One of the interesting things with the force has been who they hire. In 2007, the person named as interim police chief, Nancy Irving, had never been certified as a peace officer in California. She'd never completed a course and training that would have made her eligible to make arrests or oversee investigations, and yet she was hired to run the entire police agency. The current police chief is a career firefighter who has never, nothing in his experience previously involved criminal investigations.
So would it be fair to say that the most vulnerable, some of the most vulnerable people in our state are being protected by people who are the least able to do so?
In many cases, yes. I mean, 10 years ago, the state attorney general's office actually had a report done on the Office of Protective Services, and they found that the people in that agency, I'll quote here, lack the training, experience, and proper equipment to competently preserve and collect crime scene evidence. And I found little evidence to suggest that that has changed in the 10 years since. And on the cases we got, including suspicious deaths, there was no collection of physical evidence.
Well, let's explore one particular case that you wrote about. And that's the story of Van Ingram. Van's brother, Larry, is going to join us in just a moment. But tell us just the quick outline of what happened to Van Ingram.
On the morning of June 6th, between 4:30 and 5 in the morning, a psychiatric technician who's a caregiver at Fairview Developmental Center in Orange County hears a scream, runs to Van Ingram's bedroom, and sees him on the floor with another caregiver standing over him, and asks, "Is he okay?" And the caregiver, who was already in the room, says, "Yeah, he's okay. He just doesn't want to pull up his pants." An hour later, he's found with a broken neck, essentially. The police force on that collected no physical evidence at all, not that day and not at all that week. They took one photograph of Van Ingram as he was being wheeled out the door, and that was it. They waited 5 days to start doing interviews with potential witnesses. In the end, they omitted evidence from the case file that would have suggested that this might have been a homicide. So there was a number of steps that they didn't do in a serious death investigation, a potential homicide.
And let's bring into our conversation now Van Ingram's brother, Larry Ingram, who is a retired San Diego police officer. Mr. Ingram, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, sir.
When you got the call that your brother had been taken to the hospital, I know you had a conversation with the neurosurgeon who treated your brother. What did he tell you about what he thought had happened?
Well, initially, when I received the call, if I could back up, the Fairview employees, the caregivers, told me that Van had a slight injury to his neck, a minor injury, and he's at the hospital. So by the time I arrived there, in my mind, I thought I would see, just Van basically being readied to be released. I was approached by the neurosurgeon, Dr. William Dobkins, and he verified who I was, Neil Vann's brother and his conservator, and his opening statement was, in my opinion, either your brother was body surfing at the Wedge in Huntington Beach, and he broke his neck on the sand in a sand bottom, or somebody did this to your brother. And when I saw my brother, he was laying there with a one of these steel halos, you know, bolted to his skull, and support rods going down to his chest on a cast to pull his neck back up into place. And I just completely what I see. It was horrific.
And then just a number of days later, I know you made the difficult choice to take him off of life support, and Vann passed away. As a professional law enforcement person, a retired now San Diego police officer, just give me, in brief form, if you would, your own professional assessment of the kind of investigation that was conducted on behalf of your brother's incident.
I, quite candidly, it was literally the worst investigative procedure I have ever seen. I'm 61 years old now. I have never seen a more horrendous, if you want to call it, even call it an investigation, a more horrendous investigation than the way my brother's homicide was handled. And I was kind of pulled in, like most people would be initially, because I was presented with these two quote-unquote homicide investigators in the state of California, and even those turned out to be not even qualified to do any police work at all. Teresa DePew, a registered nurse, was one of the homicide investigators, and Pete Mastrosimone, an unarmed security guard, you know, and a reserve officer years earlier, were quote unquote the homicide investigators with, you know, badges and the whole nine yards. They looked like detectives to me. But I later found out through post police officer standards and training that all they actually had done was take a course. On how to do investigations.
Yeah. Larry Ingram, his brother Vann, died a number of years ago at one of the state's developmentally disabled centers. We want to take a couple of calls in just a moment, but Ryan Gabrielson, how common or uncommon is the story of Vann Ingram?
We aren't able to get records on most of these cases, so it's hard to say how many death cases are like this. But the story of, you know, police don't respond and collect evidence, don't interview all the witnesses, has been documented again and again and again. The federal government, the U.S. Justice Department, in 2006, in an audit of the Lanterman Developmental Center, found the exact same thing on all kinds of broken bone cases or fractures where there was just incomplete, shoddy investigative work.
Let's get a couple of listeners engaged in our conversation. This morning, Gary joins us first in San Francisco. Gary, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I've only been listening to the last part of your program, but I think you're missing a very key point. Let me explain first. My daughter has been a resident at Sonoma Developmental Center for at least 20 years, and I think that she is, firstly, she's very profoundly disabled. Developmental centers are basically split into two categories based on the level of disability. My daughter is basically in the nursing care category. And I think you are totally ignoring the fact that there is a concerted effort by DDS to totally shut down all of the developmental centers and get out of the business of overseeing care for the developmentally disabled. The reason I'm absolutely certain, having being involved with the parents group up at Sonoma Developmental Center, DDS did not supply anybody to your program because they want to shut all of the developmental centers down.
And would you say, Gary, that Would you then say that part of this story that Ryan Gabrielson has reported is indicative of the fact that there's not enough attention being paid to those centers, that the DDS isn't doing, that's the Department of Development Services, isn't doing enough to investigate these because they want to get out of business? Is that your core belief?
My belief is that DDS is trying to totally get out of the business of overseeing the care of the disabled, and they are doing it by shutting the developmental centers down and sending disabled people, including very profoundly disabled people like my daughter, who need really nursing care 24/7, out into community programs which are handled by regional centers, which are non-governmental agencies with very little oversight. And in particular, in regards to, was it Assemblyman Bell?
Assemblyman Bell. And I'm sorry, Gary, if you can just wrap up your comment because
okay.
I have to get to some other calls.
I'm not willing to listen to complaints or demands for oversight about developmental centers unless the same oversight and investigation is done and make it public of community placement as well.
Okay.
Because we know a lot of problems with community placement greater than what's going on in the developmental
center. Let me hold you there. Thanks very much for adding your perspective as a parent and someone who obviously has great personal concerns about these issues. Ryan Gabrielson, why is it that this police force, which have documented, doesn't seem to be terribly well trained, this unique specialized police force even exists? Why not in a case like the Van Ingram story call in the local sheriff's department?
Or the Costa Mesa Police Department, which deferred to the Office of Protective Services. Yeah, in most places, in most states, it's outside law enforcement, state patrol, state police that handle these investigations. And outside law enforcement can come in a lot of cases, but they haven't here.
And the point that our caller Gary made and another person has emailed in about, what about abuse and neglect in the general population? Do you have a sense of that in your reporting about whether or not this is unique to these centers or that it's also an issue in community centers as well?
Abuse is endemic to the developmentally disabled. So that's true no matter where they're housed. I can't speak to group homes because the investigation that I did was of the police force within developmental centers. But I'm not going to discount that there's issues with oversight of group homes as well.
Larry Ingram, we have to wrap up this part of our program, but I just would like to give you a last word about your brother and what you would like to see happen that will come from the reporting that Ryan Gabrielson has done.
Well, first off, Ryan did a magnificent job, okay? And had not been for him and my friend and ex-cop and fellow attorney Donovan Jacobs, this would never reach this point. But in wrapping up, I believe from the bottom of my heart, they need to really clean up and totally overhaul Department of Developmental Services from Terry Delgadillo right on down. And when it comes to the Office of Protective Services, they need to trash that whole organization, period. That they are literally incompetent, and they try to cover up their incompetence by doing illegal acts. They have no idea what they're doing when it comes to abuse, and all these little angels at the developmental centers are completely at risk. Keep in mind, the suspect, my brother's case, is still working with the disabled at Fairview Developmental Center.
And we'll have to leave it there. I'm sorry to have to interject at that point, Larry Ingram, but thank you for joining us and our condolences after this many years to the passing of your brother. Ryan Gabrielson, thanks for being with us as well and for doing this investigation. We should also note that on the California Report magazine later today, we'll have more on this story, and also this evening on KQED9, we'll have a television story on this report on This Week in Northern California. Back with more on Forum in just a moment. I'm Dave Iverson.